Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, and I'm reading today from The Scarlet Threads. The Scarlet Threads is a series of seven different parts of the mystery called Babylon. We're doing part one now, Babylon in Bible Days. And yesterday, or last time, I had to break right into the middle of the book of Daniel and stop because of time. Let's pick it up right there. Daniel sees a future for the world in terms of its reigns. Babylonia will reign, Medo-Persia will reign, Greece will reign, and then Rome. Now think about it. In the years before Christ, one kingdom, one empire after another ruled the planet. Now since Christ and Rome, though there have been many attempts like Napoleon and Hitler and communism, to name three, none have been successful. The harlot, using the picture of Revelation, keeps trying to mount a beast, right? But either she slips off or the beast falls down. It's a pitiful sight, actually, as she seems bound to this lame horse called Rome. But soon, we believe, her wounded animal will be healed. And on him she shall ride to great power, if only for a short time. And while we wait for that horrid sight to appear, it's still important to remember that though Rome, like old Babylon, declined and even fell, she never died. Well, I'm far ahead of myself. Let's go back to about 600 B.C., during the days of Nebuchadnezzar, and continue listening to the words of Daniel. In Daniel's seventh chapter, the prophet has his own dream, a confirmation of the king's vision, but in a different form. In this dream, there are four animals instead of four body sections. As in the statue, the animals correspond to the coming kingdoms. And the fourth kingdom is described again in the harshest of terms. Now, instead of 10 toes, we see 10 horns, a description that exactly corresponds to a creature in the book of Revelation seen by the Apostle John 700 years later. It's during the reign of the final 10 kings or horns, an outgrowth of Rome in the last days, that a little horn is noted. Notice that this horn is in the midst of the other horns. Its profile is given here and in chapters 8 and 11. In the chapter 8 vision, Daniel sees a ram, identified as Medo-Persia, right in the text, then a male goat, identified in the text as Greece. The breaking up of this Grecian kingdom, the Alexander kingdom, into four parts is predicted in verse 8. It's here that the prophet gives us a simple way to identify, listen now, the origin of the final world ruler. He says that out of one of the four horns or divisions of Alexander's kingdom comes a little horn. There he is again. Confirmed in following verses to be none other than Antichrist. Grabbing a history book with an accompanying map, we see that the prophet has narrowed Antichrist's origin down to four locations because of the four divisions of Alexander's kingdom. First, it could be the Grecian peninsula. Or second, it could be Egypt, which then included Palestine. Or it could be Asia Minor, or Turkey today. Or number four, it could be the general vicinity of Iran or Iraq. Daniel doesn't point us to Russia, okay? You can let that one go. He doesn't point us to China. It's not Mr. Xi or anyone following him in China. He doesn't point us to Western Europe or the United States. Somewhere close to the Middle East lives, probably now, perhaps now, the coming man of sin. All of this meshes with our present study in that this world ruler will eventually have it in his heart to destroy Babylon. And thus, though Babylon has always ridden the back of the political leaders of the world, she is still separately identifiable and will suffer a separate judgment just before the time of the end. That's in Revelation 17:18. When we get a little farther in the history of the world, we'll discuss appropriate sections of John's revelation for sure. A final word about Daniel, though. He reminds us that there can indeed be people of God in the midst of Babylonian peoples and ways. We must be extremely careful never to include all those, quote, inside Babylon under the curse of God. After all, if God's people aren't in there, to whom is he calling when he says, come out of her, my people? Well, let's go on down to 539 B.C. You know, the numbers are going smaller and smaller because we're still in Old Testament times before Christ. 539 B.C. Babylon has fallen again, this time to Medo-Persia. Before we discuss two great civilizations that imbibe Babylon's wine, let's visit contemporary prophet Zechariah. We're still in Bible times. Zechariah lived in the 530s B.C. for an astonishing look at a future Babylon. Zechariah 5, verses 5 to 11, relates the vision of a measuring container covered by a lead disc. There's a woman sitting on the inside, and she's described as wickedness, like the woman is portrayed in Revelation 17. Two other women carry this evil to Babylonia, where a house is to be built for it at the proper time. So the Holy Spirit is speaking the same message to Isaiah, Jeremiah, Daniel, Zechariah, and John. There is a Babylon in the earth. There has been for a long time. There will be almost until the end. But God has not forgotten his promise that when he finally judges her, it will be swift and it will be permanent. Let's go to Medo-Persia now and Greece. Some of the Babylonian system changes, and some of it stays the same in the kingdom of Medo-Persia. One thing that certainly continues is the hatred of the Jews. The Bible's book of Esther tells the story of an early Nazi named Haman, who thinks he has the answer, the final solution for these Jewish people. Well, God protects his people, takes care of Haman, too. We shall not stay here long, but long enough to point out familiar features of Babylonianism. First, there's the ever-present syncretism, all things together. I'm not wanting to offend, but the Persian king not wanting to offend, only to rule in peace. He succeeds the Pharaoh and becomes a god on earth, just like all the pharaohs do. But in Babylon, the Persian king, who is Cyrus, declares himself to be Marduk's choice. Remember Marduk. You have to go back and get all of these things. I can't explain each one each time. He is the choice of Marduk, he says. He claims that Marduk has searched everywhere for a righteous ruler and finally found such in himself, Cyrus. Though his successor, Darius, becomes a Zoroastrian, ruling by the grace of his Ahura Mazda, and believes his God is the only way, the people under him continue to be divided, and polytheism flourishes, and it's okay. As we shall point out later, there is some historical evidence that the historic Chaldean religion that traces back to Nimrod is now asked to leave the area altogether and winds up in Pergamum. Yes, the one in your New Testament. Well, the god Mithra, a later Roman favorite, seems to have had his beginning right here in the Persian period. So where you find polytheism, syncretism, anti-Semitism, you're very near Satan's throne. And when one who can be traced back to Babel or Babel is in charge, I'm talking about Cyrus, Marduk, and all of that, well, when you see all of that in one place, you better get out. It's time to flee. Rising side by side with Persia, I think we've got time for Greece. Her entrance, Greece's entrance to the unfolding drama, brings more of the same themes. Greece, like the others, enforces no creed in its religion, supports a multitude of gods, especially goddesses now. To the Minoans, principal players in early Greek civilization, the earth is a woman, according to Rose in his Religion in Greece and Rome. Vegetation is her offspring, and earth mother is married to sky father, Zeus. In the excavations of the early civilization of Greece, one will find frequent mother/child representations, but few such artifacts of a father figure. Father, truly Babylonian, is remote and unapproachable. Access through a female is the quickest way to the blessings of heaven, according to pagan religion. Zeus, further, is a year god. He's born, he dies, he's born again on a regular cycle, reminding one of the current ecclesiastical calendars. Thus, he is the child of the earth mother. She thus becomes the mother of God. You see how that works? Hera, meaning lady, is the first such goddess in Greece, followed by Artemis, who is Diana in Rome. Then there's Athena and Aphrodite. They all seem to share characteristics with the original, who was, remember? Right, Semiramis. Apollo, the son of Zeus, another hunter, shepherd, protector, personage. Later, he becomes the personification of the sun. All of this patterned after Nimrod. Of course, every sun must have a moon, and soon Artemis, or Diana, fills that role, previously filled by Semiramis and Ishtar. If all this is beginning to sound familiar, I'm proving my point. The point is that Satan continues to create a system of worship to which can be added or subtracted various elements to blend with whatever culture demands. What he knows God will do and has already done is his general theme. But his own innovations are obvious, too, when comparing God's written revelation to Satan's religious traditions. Thus, satanic religion, hear me well, in every culture and every age, is forever a mixture of what is perfectly true and what is absolutely demonic. Hyslop says this, "The idolatry of the whole earth is one. The great gods of every country are called by Babylonian names. All the paganisms of the human race are only a wicked and deliberate, but yet most instructive corruption of the primeval gospel first preached in Eden, and through Noah afterwards conveyed to all mankind. A system first concocted in Babylon, and thence conveyed to the ends of the earth, modified and diluted in different ages and countries." And he says, "All who have paid the least attention to the literature of Greece, Phoenicia, or Rome are aware of the place which the mysteries occupied in these countries. In all essential respects, these mysteries in the different countries were the same." Of course, the Babylonian religion is not limited to the great world powers. Other lesser lights imbibe what the mother of harlots births, But our concern in this study is to follow the headquarters of Satan, the very seat of his authority, politically and spiritually. And our travels now take us naturally to the eternal city itself, Rome. And that's next time. Thank you so much for being here today. We have a book every day that I'm sharing with you that you will perhaps follow up on. And I just want you, everybody, to know the ones that I've written. I make no money on this. I hope you know by now. There's hardly any money involved. Almost everything that the book costs goes back to the publisher. The royalties are almost nothing by my own choice. I just want to get these books out there. So for today, what do we have for today? Just one moment and I'll go look it up. Okay, here it is. It's volume 3 of Hackberry House. Now, there were 5 volumes of Hackberry House. The first one had to do with North Korea yesterday. Last one, Hackberry House 2, was about the church. And 3 is my story. This is a series of blogs and articles, poems, and more. Some original, some not. I've pieced together a collage of my 60 plus years. Well, that's what it was then. I've got to update this now that it's 70 plus. I want you to see how I found faith in Jesus Christ, where that all led. I want you to share that the people and the literature that helped form my character in Christ. I want you to listen as I speak out on issues that are close to my heart. You'll see Bob, the bird watcher, the teacher, the case manager, the short-term missionary. You'll catch my cry for the persecuted church and for the biblically illiterate. You'll see some of the mistakes. I surely don't tell everything. But you'll also see the encounters with a living God. I would like you to check this one out. Hackberry House, Volume 3. Yeah, it's available, as everything, on Amazon.com. You can go to store right here at where you're at Hackberry House. Just click on store and you'll see the different things that are down there, and you'll see Hackberry House Volume 3. Check that one out. I think you'll like it. Well, that's all I have time for today, and that's about it. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. Lord willing, we'll talk again real soon. Bye-bye.